let's prolong the magic a little bit. Hey, boys, this is the Kaufman Show. We are back for another week. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, special in-studio guest, Mr. Anakin Slade. Hello, sir.
Yeah. I don't know. That's fine. I'm in a good mood tonight.
Yeah, I think we all are. I think we're all on, we're still on the high from this weekend. And we're gonna share our high with all of you tonight. For all of you that weren't at the Montreal Baseball Project reunion, we'll try and give you the next couple of hours and make it feel like you're there.
Yeah.
What's up, Jay?
What's up, Dave Kaufman? What a great weekend. I am completely hyped up. There's a good feeling in the studio right now. So
it's all love right now.
It's all love. Yeah. And I think we're gonna relive the weekend a little bit and have a little bit of fun today. I think this is gonna be a fun show today.
I think so too. You know, we are waiting on our first guest. He's gonna be on right off the top of the
Woo-hoo!
Show.
Good way to start it off.
For me, this was the revelation of the weekend.
Yeah.
I did not know how awesome Ellis Valentine is. And I will say is, because what a cool guy.
He's a good man. He's a good man, and it was just so cool to see him. I mean, I had no idea. No one has seen him in 30 years, and he was one of the highlights of the whole weekend. I think a lot of people wanted to see him because, you know, as much as Dawson and Reigns are obviously legends in this city, nobody has seen Ellis in a long time.
A bit of an enigma.
Yeah, and people missed him.
Yeah, and he's kind of like the dark horse of the history of the Expos.
Right.
You know, like this great player that was almost like, you know, he was almost like this secret. You know, and he's got this notorious thing about having maybe the best arm in the history of baseball, and not a lot of people really, you know, not a lot of people even really saw him, you know.
Yeah.
So it was good to see him actually there in person.
Kind of a metaphor for the franchise.
A bit, yeah. Eh? A lot of secrets that this franchise has that a lot of people don't know about. But we got to see it close up, so too bad for everybody else.
Well, everybody else is going to have their chance right now to get to know him a little better. And at the end of the night at the gala, which was just so wonderful, I went up to Ellis Valentine and said to him, I really think that if I had been around when you were playing, you would have been my favorite Expo.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to find out a bit about why. Let's welcome Ellis Valentine to the program. Good evening, Ellis.
How are you?
We're great. We're still high from this weekend, man. We're just so happy.
It was a very moving time for a lot of us.
What was it like being back?
Just being in Montreal was just wonderful. What was happening with this movement to consider or try to even get Montreal Expo Baseball back in Montreal. It's just energizing being in Montreal alone. And if we can do something to get a team back there, that's going to make it even greater.
How long had it been, Ellis, since you'd been in Montreal?
You know, last time was 02, somewhere around in there. Too long ago.
02, did you go to an Expos game?
Yeah, that time around. No, we didn't that time around. And then the other time was the turn back the clock time. Do you remember those?
I remember that, yeah.
Well, it was incredible to see you, Ellis, and for me, the highlight of the weekend was watching you interact with the kids in Dorval and then in St. Leonard at the fanfare. When did you learn how to teach kids like that? When did that become, because it's so obviously a passion for you?
The times throughout Major League Baseball when we would go and spend time at various places, I realized that there was some type of a connection there, and I just kind of continued on when my career was over, using my baseball to celebrityism or whatever to open the door to get in and do some work with kids. And, you know, a lot of it is because I kind of enjoyed my own childhood without a lot of direction. I'm not going to say that my parents weren't good parents and the people around me weren't, but I wanted to give the kids something that they can utilize in their life, and I use my life experience to be able to do that.
We're chatting with Ellis Valentine right now on the Kaufman Show. Ellis, there was a really cool part of the gala when Robbie Hart had made a compilation video, And one of the scenes was the Expos celebrating in New York in the clubhouse at Shea after clinching a playoff spot. And there you are in your Mets uniform. Now,
right.
A lot of people don't realize that you were traded in the middle of the 81 season and didn't finish the year with the team. But yet they obviously thought so much of you to have you in the clubhouse, and you were celebrating with them in a different uniform. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, I still felt like Montreal was my team. And even being traded, sending Jeff Reardon to Montreal for myself, I still feel like I had some kind of a hand in it. You know what I mean? It was difficult not being able to be a part of that win, but I still felt very good for the guys, and felt good for the city.
I think, we all echo that. Did you watch, the playoffs that year? Like, do you remember where you were on Blue Monday?
Yes, I was watching, I was actually in Montreal, to be real honest, because I still had to come back there. I still had belongings there. I still had a townhouse there. And I don't know. I kind of had mixed emotions during that time. Going back, it was a little bitterness going back to Montreal and not being – or not feeling like I was a part of what was going on there, but it was kind of difficult. But yeah, that home run was just devastating.
Yeah, it was sort of, it's weird to think of it, but it was kind of the beginning of the end, and it was wonderful to pay tribute to that team this weekend. It was just great to have you guys all here, and for you, I imagine that a lot of those guys you haven't seen in 30 years.
Yeah, man, for sure. Just, you know, seeing Andre and Warren was special. But, you know, my dear buddy is Larry Parrish. Larry Parrish and I broke in the minor leagues together. And actually, he was probably one of the closest guys on the ball club. It was difficult for a lot of guys back then because Major League Baseball didn't really know how to deal with individuals like myself that was going through struggles, challenges with drugs and growing up. We're going through a lot of that here in Dallas. I live in Texas right now, and our kid Josh Hamilton that's here, you know, he's going through a tremendous challenge with his addiction issues and youth. And they have services for him. They have, you know, drug coaches. They have the team is kind of rallied around it, and you know the guy is still able to play and play well. He has these bouts of relapses here and there, but you know Major League Baseball has finally gotten better with dealing with that. And you know you just don't throw a kid out or push him aside because of these issues. We all have some issues somewhere or somehow, but. They're doing much better with it now. It's unfortunate that I didn't get that opportunity.
How long did it take you to clean up after baseball?
About a year. I was ready to kind of change my life. A lot of it had to do with a lot of shame and issues that I was going through when I first got into pro ball. And, you know, the Expos kind of, you know, dealt with a lot of that stuff with me, and you know, I kind of held a lot of it over my head, and I felt very guilty about it. So, what I learned afterwards that the drug use was not really pleasure drug use; it was actually medication to help me kind of cope with things. And I have a tremendous respect for cocaine today. I don't choose to use it anymore. However, I'm truly grateful for with the information that I had back in the day in my head about life. If I did not have the time where I medicated myself with drugs or the behavior, I probably would have done something very tragic to myself. So I'm kind of grateful for it now, what it did to kind of bridge me into the point where I got some help and I started to learn some things about my life and about my person. And then when I learned all that stuff, I kind of took that on and became a counselor to help other people deal with some of this, and I've been doing that now for 25 years. So, you know, I guess I got some lemons, and I've been making lemonade ever since. Put it that way.
You see, Montreal, I told you this guy was special. We're in conversation with Ellis Valentine, former Montreal Expos great, and with Anakin Slade and Jay Farrar.
Ellis, did you ever feel that while you were playing here in Montreal, you got a bit of a bum rap, that maybe somebody said something, a reputation, you know, kind of had a little bit of gossip about you that maybe wasn't true while you played here?
I was really kind of, I was just a young kid. I was very naive to a lot of things. I know that I was blessed with a tremendous talent. God had given me a wonderful vehicle to ride in. He just didn't give me a good manual on how to drive it. So I had a real difficult time managing my talent, and it showed. But I do believe that the Expos really, I guess, mismanaged that talent as well, or that person as well. And you know, you can't blame them. They didn't know any better at the time. You know, there was very, very little they could do. Plus, you know, we still had a huge racial thing going on in professional sports.
Right.
Blacks were just allowed to play the game from Jackie Robinson era. We had very few black coaches in the game. So when the young black players had problems, who did we talk to? We didn't have the ability to sit down in a lobby afterwards and speak to someone that was part of our culture, part of where we've come from, you know, like the white guys did. They had a chance to sit in a bar and talk with coaches about things, and they had a lot of familiar areas in their lives where we just didn't have that. We would just go to our room or go to whatever place that we could go to and try to medicate or handle our issues on our own. And, you know, it was like the blind leading the blind. So we struggled. However, you know, Major League Baseball now has almost just turned their backs on black players. And, you know, you have a few black coaches in the game now, but you don't have the players. So there's been this major flip-flop, and I don't know if that was by design, but that's just the way it is. So that's just the reality of it. So it's tough. It's difficult for the black player to kind of find some familiar ground or common conversation that would kind of help them culturally. So we just kind of floundered, you know, like fish out of water.
It's weird, Ellis. It's as if the players who had kind of broken through the first generation after Robinson are the guys that are still in baseball and are still a part of it. And you're right. It's hard to think of. I mean, it's unfortunate. The numbers are lower than ever. And we spoke with Delino DeShields and Marquise Grissom during Black History Month about this. And they just talked about how there's no money to maintain fields in urban areas. And
no.
Baseball's just fallen off the radar for basketball.
Yes, it has. And football, or track and field. And, you know, nowadays, you know, you look at it this way. Hell, up until President Obama got in office, if you were black, you didn't even consider thinking about becoming a president, okay? The same thing is happening with black players, black kids nowadays. Why in the hell should I think about going into Major League Baseball? There's none of us there. You know, I mean, so it's made this huge turnaround, and I think it's a real slap to what Jackie Robinson meant for the game and what Branch Rickey and all of them did. And but what can you do about it? Here's a guy like myself. I think I could teach somebody to throw a freaking ball from outfield. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you might be able to do that.
Huh? Yeah, I'd never get a phone call. And you know, you see guys nowadays, they feel the ball a little bit behind second base or behind shortstop, and they try to throw it home, and they throw it into the dirt. And, I mean, the ball goes 20 feet and dies, and they just don't know how to do that. So, in other words, there's just no place for us, not even on the coaching level like it should be. I mean, there's got to be something that we can do. And then I look at, this project, like the project with Montreal, hell, you know, Montreal needs to really step up and fight this thing and say we deserve baseball here, no matter what. We feel that a great team, a great product, year in and year out. However, guys went through financial issues because, you know, you have the double tax, you know, the U.S. tax and the Canadian tax. So when guys became free agents and they got taxed 50%, hell, why should I stay in Montreal? You know, when I can go down here. I remember the first time I got a paycheck when I got traded to the Mets. Hell, I thought I'd robbed somebody. I got so much money, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Let me I was scared to cash the check, to be real honest.
I don't know if you noticed, Ellis, but at the gala on Saturday night, there were a couple of posters put up by the MVP, and one of them was all of the salaries of the 81 Expos. And
wow.
It was Gary Carter, $232,000, and every other player, $32,500. Now, do you think that that might have contributed to the resentment towards Carter on the club?
No, Carter was a jerk. Let me just be real honest with you. I love Gary, okay? But Gary was difficult. He wasn't doing drugs, but damn it, he probably should have. I love Gary Carter big time. He and I broke into Major League Baseball at the same time. But a lot of people really struggled dealing with Gary. And it was hard for me, and I haven't talked about it. When he passed, I did not know what to feel, okay? But in terms of Gary as a ball player, Gary was a baseball player, okay? But in terms of Gary as a person, he was quite different. You know, I was quite different in a sense myself, but I was never a jerk to anybody. You follow me?
Oh, we're right with you.
That just wasn't me. I did a lot of damage to myself, and yeah, I harmed other people, but it wasn't an intent. I did not have an intent to set out to harm someone else. Maybe by my behavior and what I was doing to myself, kind of inadvertently harmed you in some kind of way. Yes, it did affect the team, and they said, but that wasn't my intent. I wasn't doing it purposely to get back at the Expos or back at any of the players. And I remember even during the gala when they talked about me not showing up to the ballpark on certain occasions. Well, those occasions I was either on the disabled list or suspended. So it wasn't like I was on, you know, I was an active list of playing. And I didn't come to practice, or I didn't come to a game, or I just didn't show up. It wasn't those days. When I was on the DL or when I was suspended, hell, I couldn't play. What the hell should I be there for? That was just my understanding. Now, I look back on that, that might not have been the right thing to do. However, that's just the way it was. So they made it out to be like I was just not showing up for games or not showing up for practice or whatever. And I was on the starting lineup and this, that, and the other. That day where Roger said that I was asked to pinch it and go up and pinch it against Roger, by the Blue, I had been suspended for the bumpy ump situation in Chicago. I had been suspended for 3 days. And so for 3 days, I didn't show up to the ballpark. Okay, what can I do? Go out there and take batting practice, go in and shower and go sit up in the stands and watch the game. I just didn't do that. So when my suspension was lifted, I showed up to the ballpark, and I dressed, and Dick Williams decided that I wasn't ready to play. He decided that, not me. He did. And he didn't put me in the lineup. So I sat down at the end of the dugout. Now, there was a situation where I was supposed to come, where we were down, and they needed a pitch hitter, and they asked me to go pinch it. I think we were winning, we were losing 2-1. And I went and I hit a 2-run home run and made it 3-2. And I, you know, promptly ran right back into the locker room because I knew I wasn't going out and playing in the field, you know. So I went in the locker room. And so they made a big deal out of it. But they asked me to pitch it. I hit a 2-run home run. We won the ball game. Hey, what can I say?
I hope that you know, Ellis, that what I took from that story was just that you had the most incredible talent on that team, that they could ask you to. It was, and it reminds me of, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but The Simpsons, where the Burns says to Daryl Strawberry, you go hit a home run. Okay, Skip. And I had that feeling from it that you could do whatever you wanted on a baseball diamond. And where did you learn how to throw?
I was a pitcher. I was drafted as a pitcher by the Expos. And I grew up, you know, in Los Angeles, you know, just throwing things. Okay. Just put it that way. when I started playing pro ball, the neighbors and my mom, wanted to get me into organized sports because I was breaking windows and getting up cars and stuff, you know, throwing things up and down the street. And what happened, I was 7 years old back in the day when I started, you played Little League, and Little League started at age 9. It's not like today where, you know, you start playing T-ball at 4. Okay. And back then you had to be 9 years old. Now they doctored my birth certificate a little bit and I ended up playing with a bunch of guys that was 9 years old. So I got better. Okay. In other words, it pushed me up. So really, I'm 55 right now. Okay, so I'm 57. But
are we sure?
But anyway, that's how it happened. I used to be a pitcher, and I was drafted as a pitcher, first baseman. But the year that I was drafted, the year before I was drafted, I was second in the United States in batting average with a .542 batting average. Wow. In high school. And the guy that beat me out hit .543, never played pro ball, it was never drafted. He just had one of those lucky years where everything he hit fell in, right?
Oh, wow.
And I was the better ball player with the tools and the talent and so on and so forth. That year after that, I went on to play semi-pro ball, not semi-pro, but Babe Ruth baseball in the summer after my junior year in high school, and I broke my leg. And the next year, I played baseball, but I played first base. I couldn't pitch because I couldn't land on my left leg because I had a pin from my knee to my ankle. And I was drafted by the Expos in the second round because they didn't want to take a chance on me in the first round. So I didn't get the first round draft. I was second round draft. There was a guy named Bobby Goodman that was the first round draft, was a catcher. And Gary Carter was the third round draft. And Gary and I used to get into spats a lot because he thought that he should have been number one draft, and if not number one, he should have been number two. So he wanted to fight me in rookie ball because I was the number two draft and he was number three. That's the kind of stuff I put up with Gary.
you know what I'm saying? Did you guys actually throw down, or
we threw down once in rookie ball?
Because I know who I'd take. in that fight.
Yeah, well, you know, it was kind of wild, but you know, he was just that kind of a spirit. You know what I'm saying? And so we got into it, and you know, so we had our moments. I never hated Gary or anything like that, but Gary had his own way about doing things, and that was the way it was. Great athlete, good ball player, all that old good stuff, but you know, a little special at times.
Who was your best friend on the team?
Well, actually, Jerry White and I were very close. He was the first roommate that I had in pro ball, which down in Sarasota, Florida, when we were in instructional league, he was my first roommate. My first year in rookie ball, I had my own apartment. It was $100 a month down on the beach in Cocoa Beach area, Singer Island. And I had a little one-room efficiency. And, my mom used to, when she first came down, she cried because she walked into my apartment, and it was immaculate. My socks was in the drawer. I had food in the refrigerator. The sink was clean. The bathroom was clean. She had nothing to do. she had a real issue with it. She was very cheerful. My little boy is growing up. And I said, it's just the way you raised me. That's all. But what had happened to me over the course of time, the Expos kind of, you know, there was a lot of, you know, ill negotiations on their part with me. And they hung some things over my head. I never got a chance to get a long-term contract, so I always felt very shameful about who I was and about what I was doing, and I didn't realize that how I dealt with that. I drugged, you know, I did some things drug wise because I felt like, you know, I was never going to get offered a long-term contract, any security. I remember when I could have became a free agent with the Expos in 1976, I believe it was, and they hurried up and signed me to a contract, and I, you know, I was dealing with them in good faith, just them and myself. I didn't have an agent or anything like that, and I asked, they asked me, what would it take to make you really happy and sign the contract and da-da-da? And I was a very naive kid. Growing up, I never worked. I never had a job. I didn't know about bills and payments and house notes and mortgages and all that stuff. I didn't have to worry about that. My mother always told me, she said, you just play baseball and everything's going to be fine. So she kind of helped me with a lot of things. And maybe that's the thing she didn't do right. You know, she was still mom, and she was in my corner. So I trusted that, and I trust that today. But I raised my kids a little bit different now. I raised them to know what's going on financially and within the world around them. And I remember the Expos asking me, what would it take to sign me to a contract, a major league contract? And I was just happy they were talking about a major league contract, okay? Because, you know, we're talking minor leagues before that and this, that, and the other. And so next thing you know, boom, here I am knocking on the door of playing in the big leagues with the Expos at Jerry Park and da-da-da. They get me in this room and they're talking about contracts. I'm feeling all excited. And they asked me, what would I do? And I said, I'd really love to buy my mom a house. And they said, well, what would it take? And I said, oh, $5,000. What the hell did I know, right?
That's too bad.
I'm serious, man. I'm telling you. And, you know, they signed me to this contract, and they gave me this $5,000 bonus. And, you know, when I found out what happened sometime later, okay, because I was just thinking about how I can help my mom. I remember my mother had bought our home. We were living in for $16,000. That's all I remember, okay? But, you know, they had bought that house like 8 years before, you know, I got into pro ball, okay? So back in the day, that was really big for a black family, okay, out of South Central Los Angeles. So in the Expos, they didn't try to educate me on, hey, young kid, look, da-da-da. So they took the opportunity and they locked me into a contract that locked me in for 6 years with the major, with the Expos, and before I could become a free agent. And that was the year that Lyman Bostock got an agent, okay, and signed a $1 million contract. And I didn't know this, and a lot of other guys didn't know this, but if we did not sign, we would have been a free agent. We could have negotiated with anybody. At that time, my value was tremendous amongst Major League Baseball. However, they manipulated me. What can I say?
Not alone. A lot of players were taken advantage of, and it's
exactly. It's
unfortunate. And you know, if you look at the union is so strong now, and I think that's one of the reasons is that the players got screwed around so hard for so long that something had to change. Something had to be done.
Yes. So, you know, everything's relevant when you look back on all of the personal changes I went through and the resentments that I carried. I know about all that stuff now. I know about all those types of personal dynamics and issues now. Back then, I didn't, okay? But when I got out of Major League Baseball, as I said, it took about a year for me to start dealing with my addiction and my person. See, I didn't have a drug problem. I had an Ellis problem. I used drugs to deal with it, okay? And when I found out that I was the issue, I had some of the personal problems, and I needed to work on me. I couldn't work on drugs. Drugs living live and well are out in the street right now in Montreal, in Chicago, here in Dallas. Drugs are doing fine, but people are struggling, okay? I had to clean up some things in my life, and since doing that, I've been helping other people do the exact same thing.
Ellis, we've kept you on the phone for a half an hour now, and it's been wonderful. And before we let you go, there's somebody who wants to speak to you. She came up to you at the benefit. Her name is Katie Hines, and Katie is known in Expos lore as the greatest fan in the history of the club. I think that you can count on one hand the amount of games that Katie missed in the Olympic Stadium years. And we have her live on the phone right now, and you're her favorite player, so she wants to say hello.
Hi, Katie. Hi, Ellis.
How are you?
I'm actually sitting here in my living room wearing my number 17 uniform top.
Oh, yeah,
I gotta get a boyfriend.
After my heart, see?
Yeah. No, it was really wonderful seeing you at the gala. I have to tell you, it was a big thrill. I had a barbecue yesterday with my two nephews, who I've turned into baseball fans, because, as you know, in Montreal, there are a lot of hockey heads, right?
And
yes. Yeah, which I've battled my whole life, by the way. Mm. And I don't want them to become one of them. It's over the top in this town, and I want them to learn the most perfect game on the planet Earth.
Wow, that's very, very good to hear. Yeah, it is a special game. Katie, that's good of you.
I wanted to ask you a question. Do you pay attention to MLB right now? Because, as you know, I'm bitter and twisted because of, you know, what's happened. They took my team away from me. Mm-hmm. And even though I'm a complete baseball junkie, I have a hard time. I have a hard time watching an entire game.
It's tough. It's really difficult. I know people in Montreal have got to be very, very angry about what has happened. And I watch from afar. I do watch playoffs and championship games, but just to follow through the season, no, I don't. Actually, the Texas Rangers, I played for them for 4 months, 3 months in the minor leagues, and a month in the majors, and they treat me better than any other team that I've ever played for.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
I mean, they give me more, opportunities to do things. They ask me to participate in activities. They pay me. It's
amazing.
Yeah, but
do you watch the game? Do you sit there in the living room, like I am right now in my uniform top? Do you watch the game?
I will watch a player. I'll watch Josh Hamilton bat or something like that. But I sit down and watch a whole game, Katie. I don't do that.
You know what I do? Because I'm so angry at Bud Selig and the Suits, I just pay attention to the Canadians in the game. And it's unfortunate because in the last few seasons, 2 seasons ago, there were 26 Canadian players. Last year, 22.
Wow.
This year, you know how many? 14.
Wow. 14?
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
well,
but it keeps me a little bit in the game. You know, it keeps my hand in the sport.
Correct. And I understand. Keep doing that. And don't give up on it. I do believe that Montreal does deserve another ball club. You just stay focused on the game. I still love the game. I have my issues with it. And, I'd love to be more involved with that Montreal Expo baseball project. I talked to a few people while I was there, and I just have a passion for Montreal and the city. And you gotta look at it this way: a lot of the other guys left Montreal by choice. I didn't. I was traded.
But you know what?
I didn't leave. Pardon me?
Jay touched on something. He asked you if you ever were, accused of anything or, having a reputation about, where people didn't really know the real you. Do you know often you were accused of not taking the game seriously?
Mm.
But you know there were some of us, and I'm one of them, who used to like that element about you.
Wow.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I didn't take it serious. It was that I didn't have to work at it as hard as other guys. And it was translated that I didn't take it serious. I was saying earlier where, when I came out there and I did that pinch hit home run thing, I could just call on my talent when I needed to. Well, it wasn't that simple, but I had that kind of talent that I could just respond to a situation at the drop of a dime, and that was a gift that I was given. But, God gave it to me, and God took it away.
Ellis, Valentine, I just want to say goodbye to Katie real fast. Katie,
okay.
I want to thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Bye, Ellis. I think I might have hugged you a little too hard when I first met you, but I was just so happy.
Hey, nice talking to you, Katie.
Hope I see you again one time.
Hope so soon, okay?
Bonsoir, les gars.
Thank you, Katie, for the call. And I think that, is Ellis still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Wonderful. Ellis, I want to thank you so much for your time and your candor tonight. This was an incredible conversation. And I'll tell you, first of all, I'm so sorry that last week we had to bump you with the Kings winning the Stanley Cup. But having seen you this weekend and having gotten to speak to you for a couple of minutes, I think it made this interview that much better. And I got I appreciate who you are and what you do so much more after meeting you than I ever would have last week.
You know, I got to say something real quick. I got a few seconds. I was
of course.
In Montreal and I had, so if you see anything or you hear anything, please, somebody do something about this. A picture of Dawson, myself, and Cromartie was stolen from me at the airport out of my luggage. It was an autographed picture of all three of us, a picture I've had since 1978. So if you see that floating around in Montreal somewhere, you know, do something about it.
We will get that out on Twitter right now, Ellis, and we will spread the word. We'll play a clip, and we'll send an email to all the shows at the station and make sure everybody mentions it.
Awesome. God
Ellis,
bless you. Hey, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for your time, and hopefully we can do this again sometime.
Anytime. Give me a call. We'll work that out.
All the best.
God bless. Bye now.
Well, guys, I think we just broke a record for our longest interview.
If I find that dude who stole that picture, I swear
so
to God.
Screwed.
I swear to God. I'll bring him to Ellis myself. Then we'll see what happens.
That was amazing. It was incredible to speak with Ellis Valentine. And I look over my shoulder and Jonah Carey is in studio.
What's he doing here?
What a mensch. He brought bagels.
He did. St. Viateur bagels, too.
This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back in a few minutes. Still missing Montreal ball 6 years on. Yeah, sometimes you don't know what you got till it's gone. Marquise Christian is flying. He's already in second. Here he comes to third. He's been waved. The play of the play. Christian at first time. Saved at home. This one's for the kid and the cat and the hawk. And this one's for Britt, Larry, Walk, and the Rock. And this one's for El Presidente, Moe, and O'Cab. And this one's for Spaceman, Crow, and Vlad. And most of all, this one's for us, the fans who stuck with the team when the times are tough. Singing. Welcome back. For all of you that are wondering what's going on in the world of sports, we apologize for skipping Jimmy's last two updates. But hey, how often do you get to hear from Ellis Valentine? That was something else, eh, Anakin Slade? Oh, the dude's eating a bagel. Bad timing.
I'm eating St. Viateur bagels again. Another plug. Right
we can thank Mr. Jonah Carey for bringing. Hello, Jonah.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm excellent.
It's good to see you.
It's good to be here.
Spending a lot of time with you lately.
We hung out on Saturday night, and it's actually been a whole TSM 990 weekend. I played poker with Matt Ross last night.
Wow.
And, I know. And then I had drinks with Mitch Melnick for the last 2.5 hours, and now I'm over here.
My goodness.
I wasn't there.
You weren't? Yes, no. You were. Yes, you were. That's okay. You're allowed to go to Hurley's for a bite before the show.
Hell
and,
yeah.
To be a fly on the wall while Jonah Carey and Mitch Melnick are talking baseball.
I sat there, I listened, and I learned, my friend.
I bet.
Yeah.
Did he have anything good to add, or did you already get everything out of him?
A couple of cracks at both of them. That's about it.
Jay, absolutely. Well, and I don't know if you've mentioned this on air, but I did talk to the three of you guys, to Anakin and to Dave and to Jay, over at McLean's, which of course is way superior to Hurley's.
My goodness! And, thank you.
And that was wonderful too. And it's just the thing about writing a book about the Expos is you can just, if you wanted to, you could just talk to everybody forever because everybody has great stories. And our time was wonderful as well.
How many people have you spoken to so far?
Probably about 80 or 90.
Wow!
I want to get to 200 if I can.
Wow!
Yeah, the last book I wrote about the Tampa Bay Rays. I knew nothing about them, so maybe I had to do all that research, or not nothing, but I didn't know as much about as about the Expos. I did 175 for that one, so I'm going for 200 this time.
Unbelievable. And the book is supposed to be coming out in 2014.
That's right. So just under 2 years from now, and I've been reporting. The first interview that I did was in July of last year at Charles Bronfman's office in New York. And the second interview that I did was also in New York with Steve Rogers. That was about 3 hours. He works for the MLB Players Association. And since then, it's been players and owners and general managers and, you know.
A couple people, of fans, too. A
couple of fans. I'm going to talk to Katie Hines, who, as we know, apparently can talk really well. So gonna, I didn't think I'd get on the air. I figured I'd just eat bagels with you guys, and that would have been fine.
No, I think we had to have you. And your new article in Grantland.com came out this morning. On the, you do a weekly thing. It's of the top 30 in baseball. And a wonderful nod to Anakin Slade, who's in studio right now. And that must have made your day, Anakin.
It really did. I actually waited to thank you on the air for the props this morning. I was really really kind of touched by it. Multiple links to my multiple Expo songs, and really it's been awesome to see, you know, you giving me support you know, I guess the Expos in general and all of us in trying to, like, keep the memories alive. And Jonah's been a big part of that.
And I'd never seen Anakin perform live. There were, you know, various reunion-ish things and Montreal events and so forth. And unfortunately, I don't live here anymore. I grew up here and throughout my childhood went to Concordia, and then I moved away. And so I don't get to some of these things. And this was the first time I'd seen Anakin perform. And, I mean, I have not seen you perform non-Expos music, but you are clearly a talented musician as well as somebody who can tap into that particular subject matter. It was great. I mean, our whole table, we were definitely...
Yeah, you guys wouldn't shut up while I'm trying to listen to people speak. Kaufman and Carey going on and on and on. I'm like, Jesus, guys, give it a breath, will you?
It was really hard not to talk, though.
So yeah, it really was, because everything that somebody mentioned, everybody had a story about.
Well, the guy from Cedars Hospital who was talking, that was pretty amusing.
Yeah, all the love in the world. I didn't tell you guys to shut up.
All the love in the world to Dr. Tabb.
God bless him. God bless him.
He went through an annotated history of the Montreal Expos at the dinner. I was waiting for the 5 minute monologue on Matt Sapicki.
Right.
Like, I feel like they cut him off before he got to the Sapicki.
You should have seen us. I was at a table with Roger Brulotte, Terry Haig, and Mitch Melnick.
Oh my God.
And we were all like, oh, he's getting to 94. What happened in 94? Oh yeah, the strike. Oh, thanks, doctor. We almost forgot
about
that.
What a way to kick off the whole damn thing, wasn't it?
Well, needless to say, I would imagine that the hospital got, and we don't know the numbers yet, but they must have raised a ton of money this weekend.
Sure.
My goodness, and they got some for me. I couldn't help myself at that auction.
You bought? Was it a? What was that? The thing that you
I got?
Said?
I bought two things, Jonah.
Okay, so
one, you were making fun of me beforehand, saying that it would be even more ironic, hipster ironic than my cardigan.
Which well, tell the listeners.
I bought the Bill Gullickson rookie year home jersey, game worn jersey.
Oh,
and wow, is it cool. I put it on afterwards.
Still has dirt stains on it, too, from the stadium.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Gullickson's a big man. That's going to be a swimming on you.
You know what? I'll tell you. That's what, when I was at Hurley's after the gala, and Bill Lee comes up to me, and he's like, man, I thought Gully was bigger than that. I'm imagining that it was his rookie year. He was still a kid. He hadn't filled out yet.
Yeah, well, he's like 6'2", though, isn't he?
Yeah, he's pretty large. I mean, when we were playing golf, he was in the group right behind us, and because we were so bad, he kept catching up to us.
But he's the fittest of the whole crew. Like, yeah. He looks like he's in good shape, got a great Florida tan.
He's also the first Expo I ever was aware of growing up.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
My father is diabetic and used to be heavily involved with JDF in Montreal. And Bill Gullickson is diabetic and was very involved with the charity when he played here.
My grandfather is diabetic, and actually so is Sam Fold, who's this player for the Tampa Bay Rays that I'm friends with in real life, and I've covered him, and I've interviewed him, and blah, blah, blah. And he cites Gullickson as you know, a mentor, as an idol kind of thing, for being that successful. Sam Fold is also diabetic, and he's an outfielder for the Rays. And it's very interesting to be a professional athlete to have to deal with that. It's a tremendous burden, and Gullickson was a hell of a pitcher.
I read that when Sam Fold was 12 years old, he met Bill Gullickson.
That's right.
And actually, Gullickson inspired him, and it made him realize that he could do this, that it's just another obstacle, and everybody has their obstacles, and it can be overcome.
The nostalgia of the Expos thing aside, I think that the more we go to these events and we hear about things, the more we discover, oh, yeah, these were some pretty cool human beings who played here, too. I've always been very impressed by it. I mean, you talk to anybody in baseball about Andre Dawson, they just say what a class act he is and so forth. And Tim Raines, I mean, God, I love that guy to pieces.
Oh.
He's
so cool.
The best. But, I mean, I'd never met Roland Offis before, and I'd never met Wallace Johnson before. They're terrific.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. The way that Terry Haig talks about Wallace Johnson.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
Share 20 seconds about what he said at the gala. It was I didn't know any of this.
Terry went up to Mitch and Roger Brulotte, introduced every player there, gave a little bit of background on how they came up with the Expos, told us things really that I never knew. I never knew that Stan Bonson was Rookie of the Year for the Yankees in 1968.
21 game winner.
There you go. Mitch brings up Terry to come on and...
for one player.
Just to introduce Wallace Johnson, mm-hmm. because Wallace Johnson meant that much to Terry. And Terry talked about how he'd never met somebody with the integrity of Wallace Johnson. And it was a very brief. Terry went up there for 20, 30 seconds, said what he had to say, and frankly, nobody does it better. I love Terry Haig, and I hope that he will be in studio with us in the next couple of weeks.
I have to throw this in. I was supposed to meet Terry for lunch one day. He works at the in the CBC building, which is a very busy building. There's a lot of people in the lobby. Terry Haig is the only person in the world who doesn't have a cell phone.
That's right.
So we agreed to meet at the lobby at Timex or whatever. And I've met, you know, I've come to Montreal. I talked to this person, that person. Everything is great. I don't know where he is. I can't find him. He can't find me. So, Terry Haig, if you're listening, I didn't mean to stiff you, but I did end up meeting that day.
Oh, no.
Yeah. How did anybody meet up before 1990? How did it happen?
Carrier pigeons. Yeah. I have no idea.
Bill Lee doesn't have a cell phone either, by the way.
For the record, neither does Robbie Hart.
Really?
Yeah, that's true. That was a pain in the ass for you, wasn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. It still is. I got photos for him. We're supposed to go to dinner.
So, Robbie, if you're listening, also, we'd like to hear from
Robbie,
you.
Robbie, give me a call.
Well, I can give you his email address if you want.
I need that.
That might be the only way to do it. And it was great to have Robbie be such a huge part of it this weekend. Yeah. I don't know how well you know him, Jonah.
I know of him, but I don't know him personally. And I just, so you guys could fill me in.
The sure. MLB documentary that you were featured in.
prominently for 10 seconds. Yes.
Well, and so was Katie, and yeah, so was Mitch and Elliot. Yeah. And 90% of the footage in that video was taken from Robbie Hart's film on the Expos called Nos Amours.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, from the late 90s. It was when there was still...
2001.
2001. There you go. The late 90s. And it was when there was still a chance. It you know, like the movie, one of the great scenes in the movie is of a bunch of people, including Bill Lee, playing baseball at the corner of De La Montagne and Notre Dame. And, you know, this is where the stadium is going to be type thing. And unfortunately, we're going to have to wait a little bit longer. But, you know, there's never been a buzz in the last 8 years, like there's been in the last week. And I don't know if it's just because I'm so involved in it, but from the outside, you know, it was on the front page of the paper. It's been getting a ton of coverage, and not just on this station, but all over the place. I saw members of the media from all over, English and French, a lot of articles in La Presse about it. And hey, even Youppi got involved in the story today.
What?
You really did.
The Montreal Canadiens charged the MVP project for an appearance by Youppi.
Well, the story, in fact, is
but
that...
But where was Youppi at the Dorval thing?
No, he wasn't.
And somebody from La Presse asked about it. And Warren Cromartie said that they offered $850 to the Canadians for Youppi and were stood up. And
so the Canadians came out in public and spoke against the MVP?
No, it was all a big miscommunication. And I called Donald Beauchamp at the Canadiens this afternoon and asked him about it. And he said that the message was never carried up the chain and that if senior management had been made aware of it, that supposedly the request came in late and it never left the desk of the person who made the call, who received the call. And that if senior management had heard about it, Youppi would have been there. Now, in my opinion, I don't think it's the biggest deal in the world that Youppi wasn't there.
No, me, you know how I feel about Youppi.
Well, yeah, but and I feel differently about that.
screw him, that orangutan.
Screw that Muppet
bastard.
We don't
need him around.
I like Youppi. I have no problem with Youppi. Youppi never did anything
so
to me.
Cruel. We used to go to games when we were okay, I don't know, 12, 13 or whatever. In our game, every time we would say, what is Youppi? We would discuss origins, so like superhero origins.
Right.
And I think that the one that stuck was that he was a cat caught on the orange roof of the Big O during like a nuclear clear lightning storm, and then there was this kind of big reaction, and then out of the ether comes Youppi.
That that going in your book, Jonah? Or,
I've been told to write about personal anecdotes in the book. It is going in the book. That's right.
Good.
You're going to have investigative journalism and nonsense that I talked about with my idiot friends.
Good. That's what we want.
We used to make signs when we went to games. We sat in the right field bleacher, so we made a sign that said the Maple Ridge Boys, like the Oak Ridge Boys.
Sure.
Like Larry Walker's from Maple Ridge, BC. Okay, that's
better
fine.
Than the Boogerville sign. Yeah.
The Boogerville. But I think I might have told you this at the event. But our favorite sign, of course, was during DeLionel DeShields' rookie year, we made a sign that said DeLionel DeShields, the rookie of the year. So we were very proud of it. Very proud.
Wow. No, you did not tell us that story. Yes. That was a genuine reaction.
When you're 16 years old, you have very, very complex ideas.
Whatever. That's brilliant.
It's like the RKC and Franco fan club.
Well,
that one guy would hold up that slide, the RKC and Franco fan club. That was awesome.
You know what? The cowboy was actually in Dorval. The guy who used to sit in the bleachers every game
really?
With the cowboy.
I got to get that guy.
Yeah, you do have to get that guy. Yeah. I imagine
he doesn't speak, by the way. I've never seen him say anything to anybody.
I spoke with him on Saturday.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and just to finish my point about Youppi, I think that with all the little kids there taking instruction from these wonderful ball players, Youppi being there would have totally taken away from Tim Raines and Andre Dawson.
That's right, like he did during the ballgames. Bill Lee said it during Ken Burns' film. He's like, don't look at Youppi. Don't look at Youppi. Look at the game. Enjoy the intricacies of the game. Forget, screw Youppi. I don't care. Who cares? Youppi. Whatever. I'm done. Go ahead, guys.
Hey, Jimmy, when you have a chance, you want to take a break and do an update? You're going to stick around for a few minutes, Jonah?
Sure.
All right. We're with Jonah Carey. We're with Anakin Slade.
Yeah.
The MVP is continuing on the Kaufman Show. And I don't know. I think we're just going to keep this going.
Yeah, why not? I'm having a lot of fun here.
We should wait.
Dissing Youppi and stuff.
My flight's in like 6 hours, so I'll just stay here.
Oh,
right,
dude,
until
don't worry
head
about
off
it.
Off the Dorval.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. We'll make sure you're there by 3.
Beautiful.
You driving or did you cab?
No, I have my car down here. I have to drop off. Anyway,
all right.
People really are concerned about my travel plans on live radio.
You have no idea the amount of people that want to go to the airport and give you a good farewell. This is the huge.
I'll be there.
There you go.
I'll be there.
There you go. Yeah. You know, we thought that Anakin Slade was going to be the big in-studio guest tonight, and then Jonah Carey shows up.
No, I'm always upstage.
With bagels.
Well, that was
it. The man brought bagels.
Saint Vitor upstages anybody. If the Pope walked in, Saint Vitor beats the Pope. I'm sorry.
Spoken like a true Catholic. This is the Kaufman Show. We've got Jonah Carey and Anakin Slade in studio. Jay and I are having a great time. We'll be back. Coming in on a little R. Kells, the pride of Hamilton, Ontario, the singers of our theme song. Can't wait to see them at Oceaga in almost a few weeks. What's a month away? 6 weeks away? Better get my tickets. That thing, you don't want to be standing there on the day of the show lining up to buy the ticket at face value, full value at the box office.
I believe the R. Kells follow me on Twitter.
Jimmy, would you please turn Jonah's mic on? Sorry, Jonah.
I believe the Arkells follow me on Twitter.
Huge baseball guys.
Yeah.
Huge, huge, huge baseball guys.
So does, like, the drummer from Thrice. There's all these random, like...
Thrice? What's Thrice?
That's probably... That's... Am I on?
You are on.
Sorry. That's probably because of us. We have all random alternative bands following us.
Yeah.
Well,
we follow them.
We like music, and music likes us. So it's... And frankly, the music baseball, they mesh.
Yeah,
there's a lot of musicians love baseball. There's
I did once go to a Dodgers game with Ben Gibbard, the lead singer from Death Cab for Cutie too. He's a huge baseball.
There you go. Yeah. They Yeah, that's right. They're not Canadian, but they're
from Bellingham, Washington, which is basically on the border. Big Mariners fan.
I think he produced the last Hip album or the one before that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I know he was involved in it. I can't remember to what extent.
He's a chill bro. He's a great guy.
Very cool. What kind of music do you like, Jonah?
I'm all over the place. Zeppelin, Beastie Boys, new stuff, whatever. Like, it's whatever. I'm good for everything.
Pretty crazy about this Radiohead stuff, eh?
Yeah, well, first of all, I didn't even know that they were in, I was so off my radar. I didn't realize that they were touring, and then that happened. And I mean, I'm a huge fan. I've been to shows and all this, and I don't even know what to say. I mean, it's bad if it happens to anybody. I mean, it was, you know,
when it's some band, you know, it's that exactly.
And it's the road crew of that band, and, right. And that band just toured so much, and they've probably known the guy for years and years, and it's brutal.
That band's been coming to Montreal for 20 years. I saw them.
My God, we're old.
We are. You more than me. But that's okay. You're a lot more successful, too. So it all evens out. Oh, please. We're with Jonah Carey from Grantland.com, which I think is ESPN, right, Jay?
It is.
Yeah, except that you can say the F word, right, Jay?
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
I do say that in my columns.
Yeah, it's kind of, isn't that nice to have that freedom?
I started doing it at the beginning, and I haven't done it in several weeks now, because I'd only do it if there's a reason to.
Well, yeah, you're not going to just swear for the sake of it.
Yeah. Just talking about a random utility infielder or whatever.
Right. Speaking of, no swearing right now because Jimmy's too far from the dump button for us to do anything about.
Where's the dump button? I'm sitting at the console right now, which nobody wants ever.
Do you find this daunting sitting in front of all these buttons?
No. It feels like, I don't know, feel like.
Well, like that time you flew
like
a plane?
Yeah. That whole time. It feels like I'm on the Enterprise. I'm Sulu right now. Just, you know, just going to touch random things and pretend they do little Lego bits on the thing and pretend they do.
Bro, that was nerdier than Kaufman Simpsons references.
Come
right
on.
There.
There's nothing nerdy about Simpsons
reference. I dropped a Simpsons reference in my interview with Ellis Valentine.
I dropped your talk on the fryer, mister. Oh.
Oh, boy. Dad, we got two of them, bro.
Yeah.
You guys are screwed now. No, in fact, Jonah gave me a lot of hope for for my Simpsons addiction on Saturday at the gala. Do you remember what you told me?
Oh, gosh.
I made some comment about how Jay said that.
What did I say now?
Well, just how it makes me a real geek to be such a Simpsons fan. And I was and I always tell you, no, I know a lot of really cool people that are big Simpsons nuts.
They're cool to you.
They are cool to me. Yeah. And
I remember
what
I said.
And Jonah piped in.
Yeah. Well, what I said was when I first met this girl who I was attempting to romance. What I ended up doing, what attracted her to me was not my looks, because I was very sick at the time. I had like 103 fever. I hadn't slept in a couple of nights. I had like Robert Plant hair. I had hair down. I had crazy. My hair was long hair. Jonah's a disaster. But the one thing that did it was my Simpsons knowledge. We just started talking Simpsons. First of all, a girl with, you know, 18, whatever, with that kind of Simpsons fluency, I'm already like,
oh, man.
Whoa. And that did it. And so over the course of our marriage, 10% of our marriage is based on my ability to reach things on high shelves. I'm very tall. I'm 6'4". And the other 90% is based on my ability to deploy the correct Simpsons line for the correct social situation. So, for example, if we're at a restaurant and the service is very slow, what I would say is, where's my burrito? Like that. And there's various other things. So, yes, it's very important.
And that does absolutely nothing for Jay or Anakin.
Dave Kaufman is totally there.
Clueless. I'm sold, man.
Clueless.
You're being replaced for I'm taking your job. And we're not even going to talk about sports anymore. We're just going to do TSN.
Take it. Give me a shot at Grantland. See what happens then.
Do it.
Oh, wow. No, you don't want. There'd be a lot more F-bombs than you're
There's not
used
enough,
to.
Not enough bearded guys on staff at Grantland. I'm literally the only one who doesn't have a beard.
Can they grow beards? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They're all hipsters.
Chuck Klosterman can grow a hell of a beard.
Oh, yes,
That's
can.
What I'm saying.
Jonah, let's go back to the Expos and to this weekend. What did it mean to you? Like, do you think that it was important for you to be here for it?
Well, because
the book notwithstanding.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was good for the book. I just didn't know what to expect coming in. I mean, I've been to various dog and pony shows for various causes, and I just didn't know. It's obviously cool when 15 or 16 expos get together, but I just thought it was really well executed, to be honest with you. Yeah, there were a couple technical glitches or whatever.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah, but it was just really good, and I didn't get to every event. I did go to the golf tournament, and I went to the gala. I didn't go to the clinics, but I mean, from what I hear about the clinics, it was great, and it meant a lot to the players. I was... after the, you know, the gala kind of winded down a little bit, and I was walking out, and Brent Smith was there, and I walked out with Brent Smith, and we had this lovely conversation, how was the weekend, and so forth. And he was, you know, going to get a smoke and all this, and we're just talking. And you know, I said, how long had it been since you talked to these guys? 25 years or whatever. It was great, I think, for me and you and us. But I think that it meant a lot, actually, to these guys. And you always, I'm always hesitant to project feelings onto athletes. They have a lot going on or whatever, but these guys are long since retired. Crow and Ellis Valentine, Crow, in all the things that he said on stage, the one thing he kept talking about was, I can't believe my homie Ellis Valentine is here. I haven't seen him in 31 years.
Yeah, which is crazy.
That registers. You know, that registers. They were basically kids then, and now they're in their 50s, and it was awesome. I thought that that was what impressed me the most, was the way that the players legitimately cared about this thing. It wasn't, oh, they cut them a check, they're going to go do this charity thing because of whatever. It was they wanted to be there. They really reveled in the whole thing.
Who was the, and I'll ask you, Anakin, first. Who was the one that you were most excited to speak with and meet?
Rock. Yeah, I was excited to talk to Rock. And you know, Dawson, too. I mean, Dawson's presence was amazing. I actually got there on the Thursday and met up with Kenny and some of the guys. And you know, it was such a circus that they had 240 balls to unwrap so that the guys could come and start signing them to give out to, you know, various people, I suppose. And so Kenny Dorn, one of the organizers, is like, Anakin, I hate to ask you this, but can you help us unwrap some balls? And I was like, no problem. So I just sat there unwrapping these balls. And then one at a time, they started trailing in. Bryn Smith came in, Gullickson, they started signing their balls. And then at one point, I just turned around and I just saw him standing there, the Hawk, just standing there like looking down on us all. And I just picked up my phone very quietly and I started texting. I texted my brother. I'm like, bro. He's standing right in front of me.
and I texted back.
He's like, oh, my God, touch him. That's
that's what I wrote back.
Wow.
Get some of his DNA on you.
His presence is just phenomenal. But Rock, he's just there was something. He really impressed me because he's just always smiling.
Yeah.
And he's got that whole creeping thing running around. And the dynamics between him and Hawk were also amazing.
It was like watching two kids in high school, eh?
Yeah, Hawk was very stone-faced until Rock showed up, you know, and he would like put him in headlocks and Rock was like, yo, get off me, man. You know, like, they're playing like a couple of kids, you know, as a real, like a high school reunion type feel. And, you know, I mean, I can go on forever about all those guys. Bryn Smith
is the nicest guy I've ever met.
What
in
a
my
sweetheart.
Life. I swear to God. He is. He's a sweetheart of a man. So nice. Just telling stories, taking the time, soft spoken. And he came actually to the pub afterwards, and I sat there and I had a couple of pints with him, and he told me some great stories, not just with his time with the Expos, but with the Colorado Rockies as well. That, you know, he was the first pitcher ever for the Colorado Rockies.
Oh, he was their opening
the first,
day
first
start.
Pitcher.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't remember
that. And he told
me
about that moment, you know, and it was against the Expos, by the way.
That I do remember.
Yeah. And he just told me about that moment, how the whole stadium was swaying. And, you know, catcher kept calling fastball. And he's like, yes, I know. I'm just waiting for the stadium to stop shaking because of the fans.
Wow. That's incredible. Jonah, for you, same. I heard you say it when it was Rock as well. Or
well, Rock is my favorite player of all time.
Okay.
And I'd interviewed Rock before for the book. He was managing the New York Bears, and I went over to his office, and that was phenomenal. It was great. But it's weird for me because I'm there as a journalist. I'm legitimately there as a journalist. I mean, you guys do journalism, but you were there kind of probably.
Oh yeah,
more
I didn't have a tape recorder out exactly.
Yeah, we were there for our own fun.
And but it's a little, you kind of don't know how to play. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm so and so. I want an interview and whatever. And I'm just like, oh my God, I watched you when I was like, it's not just that I watched them when I was a kid because it's the 81 team and not. If it's a 94 team. I was just about an adult by the time that happened. So, I don't know, Sean Barry was there. I'd be like, okay, hi, Sean Barry. But I was seven in 1981. Right. And so I was a little kid. The first memories that I have vividly of baseball are watching the 81 team specifically on my grandfather's couch when my feet couldn't touch the ground. And these guys are there. And so it was just, it struck me in a very, very different way. And I didn't feel too bad about being a fan, despite the fact that I know that I have to interview these guys and ask them, in some cases, some pretty pointed questions because some of them had controversial careers, what have you. So it was an interesting dichotomy that I hadn't usually had just doing this kind of thing.
But you're so obviously a fan of this team. I mean, you're so outwardly open about it. If anything, you help put the Expos back on the radar a bit with, again, I know you always, it's like you start blushing. It's really adorable, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know why it makes you so uncomfortable to know that you have a huge...
What's happening here?
I'm not uncomfortable.
Jonah has a huge platform, and it's wonderful that he's able to give Expos fans a voice. If you hadn't written what you wrote this morning, how many... I mean, God knows how many hits those videos got today because of that.
Mm-hmm.
He got some hits before that came up. Popular songs.
He did.
Turns out he's a very successful musician.
He had 140,000, I think, before. But
I'll tell you tomorrow how many hits we get.
There you go. I look forward to hearing the number. But it can validate everything I just said.
But anyway, I appreciate it. And I mean, it's, you know, my boss is Bill Simmons. He's a big Boston fan. Well, they have a lot of fans of the Red Sox. And if he writes about the Celtics, if he didn't, it would still be fine. But I think that, and the Expos have been dead for 8 years, aside from the fact that they were an obscure team to begin with. I'm not necessarily doing it on purpose to rep them and to bring it back or whatever. It's just me. These are my experiences. And when Carter died this year, for instance, and I just wrote a thing about Vladimir Guerrero last week, by the way, for Grandland, too. Thank you.
In fact, you quoted one of our listeners, a guy named Matthew Ferreira Fernandez, I believe.
Yep.
Who comments on the show a lot, and I saw his name. I thought that was really
nice.
Cool.
And just when I write stuff like that, it's almost more than the Expos. I'm thinking about the Expos, but this is when I left Montreal right as basically my childhood ended. It was right after college. And so everything up until that point is all my formative years, all the games that I went to with my grandfathers and my friends and so forth. And it's just, you can't separate one from the other. When I wrote about Carter specifically, I did two articles. One was for Grandland. It was as a journalist. Here's Gary Carter. Here's his impact on the game and so forth. And the other one I did for my little blog, which nobody necessarily reads, but in this case I tweeted and a lot of people read it, and it was extremely emotional, and it was all about how it would have been nice if I could have passed it on to my kids and about this and that. And if I can't and this team doesn't exist, here's what you need to know about your dad when he was 7, 10, 15, 20. And this is important stuff to me, and that's why it really registered. And that was the big thing for me about the Expos in the first place. I don't care about Nelson Santovania's batting average. I care about what it was like to grow up in Montreal and to be a fan of this team.
Well, the four of us all had it, and I think we were quite lucky, and hopefully we can keep that passion alive until one day it maybe returns. And I'll tell you, I never feel that way. I'm usually the last guy to say Major League Baseball is coming back. And I mean, we've had many conversations over the phone where I've said, oh yeah, 20 years, 30 years. For the first time in 8 years, I feel like it's closer than ever. And yeah, I know it's still very, very far away. They still need a stadium. They still need somebody with many billions of dollars who's willing to lose many billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. But it feels good right now. There was such a long period in the city where I was embarrassed to be an Expos fan. That nothing good came out of being an Expos fan and talking about the Expos. It was constant derogatory comments thrown my way for the hat I was wearing or for the fact that I was going to the stadium 14 out of 16 nights. And it's nice to not feel that way anymore. I don't feel embarrassed for something that makes me so proud and so happy.
Let's be honest. You know, when talking to a lot of my staff at the bar and a lot of the patrons, anybody, I mean, under 30 years old, had no idea who any of these guys was. Even up to Andre Dawson and Tim Raines, a lot of people have no idea who they are. And it was embarrassing. You know, it's the way it is. But it doesn't mean they don't want a team. A lot of the sure. girls that work for me, even the girls and, you know, girls who are 20, 22 years old, are like, I wish baseball was back. It would be cool to have a team right now. And when we have events like this by the Montreal Baseball Project, what it does is it creates a mythology.
Mm-hmm.
It creates a mythology. People are saying, wow, I missed something. And that's the whole sport of baseball, isn't it? People, they always say people who don't like baseball is because they feel like they're missing out on it, you know? And that's the whole Montreal Expos thing. It's becoming a bit of a mythology, and people really want to find out about it. And they're like, oh, such a cool hat. I wish we had a team back. Fine, I'll take it.
Yeah, whatever it works. Takes. Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Well,
agreed.
And when I talked to Melnick earlier, he made an interesting point. We're talking about the Habs. Listen, it's a Habs town. I get it. But the thing about the Habs is they don't play really during the summertime, because obviously the playoffs are in the summertime, and that's not going to happen. Boom. But you've just got to say, I mean, what happened this evening? I went out and I had dinner on a terrace in Mile End, and then I went over and sat outside at Hurley's. Whatever, and it's been the 4 or 5 days I've been here has been the most beautiful weather, and it is like this in the summertime often. And you get that when you have a baseball team. And I think that was what frustrated people about not getting a stadium was we're such an outdoor species yes. in this city. We want to be downtown yeah. on a terrace somewhere in that corridor within 2 or 3 blocks. That's where people go. And it's just so blatantly obvious. And there's economists would say, well, we don't know if it's going to happen. Maybe you're just taking money from the movie theaters and you're putting in a baseball stadium. But there's nothing down there where they wanted to build it. And there would be now. And it would be this whole big thing. And that I think that Montreal has this unique flavor to it that would have corresponded very well to something like that.
What do you think the next step should be?
Well, I don't want to throw too much cold water on it. I think that if Cromartie wants to go down the road and see if he can find a money man for something, you know, for minor league baseball, whatever, that's fine. I don't think the end goal has to be that they get an expansion team of major league baseball or whatever. And I frankly don't think it's very realistic. But, you know, if he could build a stadium in Laval for $10 million and seat 5,000-6,000 people and they could play A-ball there, that'd be pretty cool. I'd go to that. That'd be fine. I think, and that's a nice thing to do in the summertime, too. So I don't know. I don't think that it's a sort of it has to be X. I'm just fine. I like the idea of that they're making an effort and it seems important to Cromartie. Okay, go for it. That's fine. I don't think it's realistic to get Major League Baseball back in the city for a variety of reasons.
You mentioned Laval. Is it because you don't think that minor league baseball would work on the island? There's too much of a hoity-toityness to the city?
It's not just that. It's things like development costs. I mean, if you literally put it right in, you know, the downtown corridor or whatever somewhere, it just become much more expensive. And if you want it to be this kind of more relaxed thing, I mean, you know, when they would play up at Saputo Stadium or whatever, they would draw there. I mean, that's fine. I think something like that is fine. Or even if you did it on the island, not quite out to Laval, whatever, West Island or somewhere a little further east, whatever, somewhere where there was some people that would go, that's fine. You don't need the critical mass the way you do Major League Baseball. Of course, when you're on the East End with the Expos, that was a big problem. But in this case, you don't need to draw as many people. So it could totally work. Put in St. Leonard, whatever. It would be fine.
See, I don't want to see it on the island because I feel like that takes away the chance of a Major League stadium being built on the island. I imagine that there would be
that's
some
you
sort
think
of
that might happen. I mean,
well, I think that you have to leave the door open.
Right.
And again, it would have to be somebody with stupid money. We know from people are protesting about education, so I can only imagine what would happen if they announced that the government was kicking in for a stadium. This would have to be done fully privately.
But it's not just, okay, so let's say Monsieur Pelladeau wanted to put in $1 billion. Fine. Okay, so who says he's going to be allowed to do that? You know, I think that's sort of the next step is even if you have the money, man, Major League Baseball has to want to do this. I mean, the last years of the Expos were a disaster, and the you know, even if you have one person with a lot of money, you still need the support from the rest of the community. And a big reason the Expos left is because the local media did not step up. The local business community did not step up. Yes, it is the case that if you go to a restaurant and people tell you that there's cockroaches in the soup every time, you're probably going to stop going to the restaurant. I think there was some of that syndrome. But I think at a certain point, there has to be personal responsibility for people here with means who just, yeah, I don't care. I mean, I don't know how to say this delicately. Jeffrey Loria seemed to have tried to make a go of baseball in Montreal, and nobody was interested.
I think that's a really important point, and it's something that you've hinted at in your tweets, and I think is probably going to end up being a pretty big revelation in the book. So I imagine you don't want to talk about it too much, but I know that a lot of people feel that way.
Jeffrey Loria is not Mussolini. He's a businessman who, you know, this was the opportunity that was presented to him, was in Montreal. Maybe it would have been more lucrative in another city, but okay, I'm going to make a go of it. And he made a go of it, and nobody responded. That doesn't mean that there weren't things that happened before. A lot of things happened before. But you have to trace what happened with the Expos and why it didn't work out years back. I mean, to the Bronfman years. You know, Gary Carter leaving in 1984 was one of the seminal moments for the Expos leaving, even though they didn't leave until 20 years later. A lot of stuff went down the pike. Scapegoating is too easy. A lot of the media did it about, oh, it was Brochu or Laurie or that's
but they
too
always
easy.
Did it late. I never understood why the media wasn't on top of things from the get-go. And it's something that still upsets me, and I feel like I could have had a lot more knowledge about what was going on around me if the media had stepped up and said, this is BS and this is happening in front of our eyes. And it was almost like it was only done after it was too late.
Well, who has the ear of the media, too? Who are the interested parties? Was it the partners who were talking in people's ears about and wanting to save their reputations, which they certainly were, and they could have come out looking much worse than they did? I mean, I honestly put a lot of the blame on their shoulders, to be honest with you. They put in $5 million in 1990, and they said, don't bother me again. And that's not how you run a baseball team, unfortunately.
Unbelievable. Jay?
I got nothing.
Nothing, eh?
I agree with him. Totally.
This is book stuff, by the way. So, I mean,
don't give too much away.
We can go as far into it as you want, but I just, in general, I think scapegoats are too easy in politics and business and whatever. We just, it's like, oh, this is the blaring headline of the paper. It's so nuanced. There's so many complicated things. The Jays took control of the Canadian TV market in 1985 or whatever. That was very important. You know, yes, 94 was also important. And, the Canadian dollar did play a role. And also, there was, you know, in the early 90s, there was a recession going on in the States, but it was much worse in Montreal. People didn't have money in Montreal.
Right.
And then you get to the late 90s, and they're trying to build a stadium, and what's happening? At that time, there was a huge healthcare crisis, and it was a political time bomb for Lucien Bouchard to try to build a stadium or to even support a stadium if people are out in the hallways in the hospital.
The optics was terrible.
The dollar was terrible. There's all these things. And this book is not going to be, why did the Expos die? It's 55,000 things. It literally is stories about my idiot friends, interviews with Andre Dawson, interviews with Charles Bronfman, perspective on the city of Montreal and its culture, and yes, why the Expos left. It's going to be a big deal. But as far as this goes, there's a lot going on.
I can't imagine how you're going to cover everything.
It's going to be a big book.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I have a way of synthesizing. I'm under contract not to write it too long, but you know, I have to figure out a way to kind of meld all this stuff together because it is substantial. Jacques Doucet wrote a book about the team, and it only covered the team up until 2004. It was like 400 or 500 pages, and then he had to do another one. So he's got, I don't know, 800 pages of total Expo stuff. It doesn't deal with any business things.
Wait, really. So the book is like 69 to 84 and then 84 to 2004?
Basically.
Wow.
And yeah, and so he's got all that going on, but that's a pretty straight-up book. This is like layers and layers and layers more. And the first one that's really done that in English, Monsieur Doucet did a pretty good job in French. Yeah, you know, it'll be a challenge to kind of get this down. But my theory is gather as much information as I can, then try to boil it down.
Before we let Jonah go, I want to ask him about R.A. Dickey, who
threw
another one-hitter tonight. I don't know if you were...
I'm looking on Twitter, yeah.
How is a knuckleballer doing this?
He's mastered his craft. I had him on my podcast. That was on Grantland. So go to Grantland or Google Jonah Carey, R.A. Dickey, Grantland or whatever, and we talked... Of course, I'm going to say that I was a hipster interviewer. I had this. I had it all going on before it went down. No, we talked at length about, you know, the way that you throw a knuckleball and how it takes time or whatever. This guy was a traditional pitcher until he was, I don't know, 30. I mean, he had a, you know, an okay fastball, and he was a big prospect for a while. And then it turned out he had no UCL. He literally doesn't have an ulnar collateral ligament. You're making a face like you didn't know that. That's true. He was going to get $800,000 signing bonus. They find out he does not have a UCL. Forget about tearing it.
Wow.
And it went to... I don't know, 10,000 or whatever. There's all kinds of stories with this guy.
He had some personal problems, too, as well, with his wife and a little bit of adultery going on and so on.
Well, he was abused when he was
abused
young,
as well,
right?
Yeah.
And he wrote a book this year.
Yes, he did write
a
book.
And I feel
Wherever
like
I Wind Up, which I have, and it's a good book, absolutely recommended. And a very interesting character, very smart, English major. I mean, he could kind of do whatever he wanted to, and his book seems to have been written... at least largely by him, which is unusual.
Scaled Mount Kilimanjaro over the winter.
To big controversy, started Star Wars night at the stadium, named his bats after swords from Lord of the Rings.
Simpson guys don't have to feel so
no,
bad
No, I'm
anymore.
Not even that nerdy. And his at-bat music is the theme from Game of Thrones. He's like a mega nerd, and oh yeah, he's going to win a Cy Young. Exactly.
I would so play that if I was going up to the plate. Oh my God, I'd hit a home run every time.
You know what that replaced? He used to play the Imperial March from Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's what it replaced.
Well, that's old news, man. Get with the new nerdy,
I'm with
geeky
you.
Stuff that nobody cares about.
Jonah, before we let you go, I have one last question. Did Bud Selig give you a few minutes of his time for the book?
We're working on it. It's in progress, and I'm going to try to make it happen.
Good stuff. Jonah Carey, thank you so much for coming in studio.
Thank you, gents.
Thank you for the bagels.
Of course.
And have a safe flight home, and hope to see you back here real soon.
In 5 hours.
My kids will appreciate me being a zombie when I get home.
We appreciate your time. Thanks for coming in so late tonight.
Thanks, guys.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Anakin Slade is here. This is Jack White and Loretta Lynn.
What?
Yeah. Damn straight from the album Van Leer Rose. The name of the song is Portland, Oregon, for our good friend Ben Christensen, who will be joining us. I believe he's on hold right now. But first, Jack's got to play his guitar. That's right. That's a beautiful voice, I'll tell you that. Although not as beautiful as our next guest. Ben Christensen is... how do I describe him to someone who doesn't know him?
I don't know.
There you go. Anakin Slade needs to be... first of all, Anakin, you'll appreciate this. I got to know who Ben Christensen is through his blog, Beard to be Feared. And he wrote a beautiful piece on Gary Carter. After Carter passed away.
I like him already.
Yeah, I thought you might. And I imagine that he's a huge fan of yours as well. Considering
I like him even more.
Yeah, there you go. Jay, do me a favor.
Yeah.
Bring Ben in. I've got to go find a pair of headphones because these aren't working and I won't be able to hear him.
All right.
You're up.
Ben Christensen, welcome to the Kaufman Show, my friend.
Hey, what's going on? How are you guys doing tonight?
Oh, we're doing pretty well. Have you been listening?
I have been as much as I possibly can in between watching the Padres Rangers game.
Yeah,
the Mariners Angels game as well. So
we had Jonah Carey in earlier, as well as Ellis Valentine on. I don't know if you heard the interview with Ellis Valentine, but
I caught the tail end of it, and I could, for some reason, my computer would not load up for the live stream, and I was just getting like incredibly frustrated. It was like I really wanted to hear your guys' interview.
I believe it's up on the podcast. Hi, Ben.
Hey.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy. I have good headphones now, and I can hear. Everything is perfect. Life is good.
Excellent.
Thought of you a lot this weekend. We would have loved to have seen you up here for the MVP reunion. It was a wonderful time.
I know. I would have loved to have been there. God.
Don't worry. You're coming up this summer. We're going to make our little pilgrimage down to Cooperstown. It's going to be great.
That is true.
Say hello to Mr. Anakin Slade, Ben.
Hey, Anakin, how's it going?
Great, Ben. Good to meet you, man.
Nice to meet you as well.
I imagine that you've seen Anakin's Expos video and his Gary Carter video.
I have.
Yeah, I thought you might.
Yeah. No, it was fantastic, and it definitely brings me to tears every time I still think about Carter and stuff like that, but your video was incredible.
He made a whole room cry this weekend, Ben.
I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, cool. He also got a standing ovation on Remember. He did Remember as a second song in his set and got a standing ovation from 400 people.
Bryn Smith told me he had to leave the room because he didn't want to start sobbing in front of everybody. So he literally got up in the middle of my kid performance and he walked out of the room. I apologize.
I saw him at the bar.
I know that Larry Parrish was tearing up as well. Somebody who was sitting with him told me that. And I was crying and tried to keep my just staring straight at the stage because I didn't want Jonah Carey to see me crying. But as he wrote this morning in the piece on Grantland.com, he was crying too. And frankly, the whole damn table was. And, you know, it's a wonderful thing that to be able to express people's emotions on such a large scale through song. And I know it resonated with you all the way on the West Coast as much as it did with us.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, it was really interesting. I didn't put the picture up, even though I meant to. The friend you hooked me up with, Jason Portnoy, and
yeah.
True Rivals company.
Portnoy.
Know him. He's Anakin Slade is often sporting True Rivalry apparel.
I am.
I was actually wearing the Gary Carter shirt that morning.
Oh, I put it up. I saw it. And I retweeted
right,
it.
Did.
There was a photo of you in the bar, and I think that you had put up a tweet said, "Wonder why I'm here." And there was a photo of you with in your "Here's looking at you, kid" T-shirt with a backwards Expos cap and two pretty girls sitting at the bar that explained why you were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That was a very interesting night. Believe me.
we'll get the details on that off air. But tell me, how is the readjustment back to life on the West Coast, Ben?
It's been fine. Today was really interesting because my roommate and a lot of my friends end up graduating college today.
I was able to catch his. He graduated in the sociology department. Actually, he graduated with Darren Thomas, the star quarterback for Oregon, the last two seasons.
Oh, then you're in trouble next year, I guess, eh?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have some solid backups, so I'm not complaining too much.
Okay.
And then went over to the School of Journalism and Communication, saw my old professor, saw a couple of my friends that were still graduating from there, and then my friend Jenny Barcliffe, who I work with at Max's Tavern with. And she was graduating in English, so I was able to catch all three of those today. And it was really surreal because a lot of people kept coming up to me and asking me how New York was, and it's like, well, I wish I was still there, but it was great nonetheless. And then it was just the reality that even though I graduated my first degree last year, or my first two degrees, sorry, last year, I'm still finishing my third in the fall, and it's the reality of all my friends are no longer going to be here. And that was really kind of hard to hit.
Oh, well, I mean, I think you knew that going in, right?
Oh, totally.
there's worse things than you get a whole chance to make all new friends. But you were at the, what is it? I don't know the name of the team, but the Eugene minor league team. You went to their game and put up a picture online. The Emeralds, thank you. Put up a wonderful picture of their mascot who was sporting a Shaka Brody, picture or tattoo on his body?
Yeah, there was a one of my good friends, Adam. He's a graphic designer, and we stole a couple images from Nike. Wink, wink. And it was from their Heritage line last year. They made with like the facial hair and the hair and such for a lot of baseball players. We had made one with a beard and long hair, much like I had. And oddly enough, it looked a lot like me when we were done. And he found the graphic I'd made for the T-shirts and printed it out and put it as a little tattoo symbol on his body. And when he spotted me, he lifted up the shirt, which looked odd because he wasn't wearing pants either. And I snapped the photo, and it was incredible. I never gotten so many likes on a photo, and I think the last time I looked, I was up to like 75.
Yeah, it went mad viral, that shot. It was because it's a great picture, and how cool is that? You've got the mascots of every Major League Baseball team on your body, and there's a minor league mascot with your image. I thought it was very, very neat.
It was great.
So what's on tap for you this week? You're going to sit around and wait for R.A. Dickey to throw another gem in 5 minutes?
I know, exactly. I was sitting around watching that game today, and I was watching that game, the Indians game, because I was looking to see if Lonnie Chisholm was going to hit for the cycle. He didn't. And then Aris Ramirez for the Brewers, I thought he was going to hit for the cycle. He didn't. And then I'm watching the Diamondbacks game, and then Aaron Hill hits for the cycle. It's like, wow, I've never seen so many people in one day come close, and then go figure the nightcap game, the one guy just knocks it out.
Well, that was Aaron Hill's second cycle of the season, wasn't it?
No, it was his first, but it was I think I misworded that in the tweet because I was trying to play it off as it was the second cycle of the season because Scott Harrison of the Mets hit the first one, and then Aaron hit the second one of the season.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
pretty sure I'm right about that.
Yeah. Hey, it's okay when you're right 90% of the time. So, anything else you want to share with Montreal tonight, Ben?
I don't know. I like I said, I really wish I was there for the Montreal game or the fan fest. That was incredible. The photos you posted, I'm so happy for you and for the city that everybody come together and pull that off.
Yeah, it meant a lot. It was a very special weekend, and to be able to share it with Jay and with Anakin and with so many Expos fans, it was very validating. I don't know if you guys agree with me, Jay or Anakin, but it felt like all of our emotions for the last 8 years were validated this weekend.
Well, it's really satisfying to relive those things. You know, it's like losing something really dear to you and being able to return to it. And a lot of times you don't get a chance to do that in life. And for us to be that close and that intimate with it, it's very satisfying.
Well, you'll be at the next one, right, Ben?
I hope that God I am. I'm going to the A's Mariners game next Monday.
Nice.
Actually, Monday and Tuesday. There's a friend I made on Twitter who lives up in Seattle, and he and I are going to go to both games.
This is very funny. Can I say this for 2 seconds?
Of course.
I'm going to Seattle on Thursday, and I'm staying in Vancouver. And I looked at the Mariners schedule, thinking that I would come down on the Monday to see that game. And I can't delay the flight. I wanted to, but I can't delay it. But I was very, very close to actually going to that game as well, believe it or not. How crazy is that?
That would have been awesome.
Oh, too bad. I'm sure you guys will hook up at some point, though. Ben has a plan to get to Montreal this summer and pay homage to Jackie Robinson.
Might be the first week of Montreal.
Pardon?
Or, sorry, first week of August. Might be the first week of August. I'm looking into going to the Tigers-Blue Jays series at the end of July and just jumping over from there.
Anakin, when are we going to Yankees-Blue Jays?
August 13th is the tentative plan, right?
I believe. 12th? Whenever, 12th it's the Saturday game against the Yankees.
I think it's the 12th or the 13th.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, you come in the first week of August, Ben, and we'll go to Oceaga.
All right. Sounds great to me.
And in the meantime,
he'll
sure
fit right in with the hair and the beard.
it'll be flowing, believe me.
Oh, my God. Everybody's going to send pictures into him of him to Deadspin. I can just see it right now. Ben Christensen, biggest baseball fan I know, most passionate baseball fan I know, and we're going to continue this conversation next week.
Yeah, actually, can I give a shout out to Crazy John 85 in Denver? He's been pestering me for the last couple of weeks, and
he's been waiting on hold now for about 3.5 hours. I'm not kidding.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah, we do this to him every week. Yeah. We get a sick kick out of it.
The count is actually at 41 minutes.
41
but,
minutes.
But it does say on it, John Denver, he will hold.
So that's exactly what he's been doing.
Well, I guess there might be no clearer reception than when you call in and listen through the...
Yeah, sure.
Ben, thanks so much for your time, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
We'll speak to you soon.
Great meeting you, man.
Follow him on Twitter at Shaka Brody, S-H-A-K-A-B-R-O-D-I-E. Anakin Slade, thank you so much for coming in tonight, man.
Oh, wonderful. Like I just tweeted, it's just been a great thing to actually prolong all these wonderful feelings that we had. I just didn't want it to end, so when Dave suggested to come on the show, I was all over it because I just
never been up this late, bro.
I know. I'm getting tired, but I'm still on a high, so you never know how long I'm going to be up tonight.
The Farrar boys were shining through at the golf tourney. Me, my dad, and my bro. It was a great time.
Never seen you smile so much, bro.
I met my hero.
I think it was wonderful that the three of you were there. You figure so prominently in the Expos songs. And
50 pounds more than I am now.
Well, that's okay. And you dress
everybody to know
you
that.
Dress a little better now, too.
Thank you. It was the early 2000s.
Can I just say, that picture, it was the 2004. We're at the midpoint there.
Yeah.
But it's not the 80s, Jay. I mean, you were dressed.
I had to go to the club.
The last Expos game, and you are dressed like... I don't even know how to explain it. You're a different guy.
I didn't even want to be there.
That was a bad face. But you look better in the one where we're at Shea Stadium.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
Do I?
Yeah,
you do.
You do.
Okay, you look more like yourself.
Anakin Slade, thank you so much for being in for the last 2 hours. It's been great to have you here. And more than anything, thank you for sharing your passions with us. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And I'll do my best to keep the flame going like we all will, right?
I know you will.
Let's do it.
Yes, we will. Anakin Slade, Jay Farrar, Dave Kaufman. This is The Kaufman Show, and this is Kid by Anakin Slade. Buy it on iTunes. I can't imagine you paying for taking a pun. Can't imagine you feeling flat balls and not buns. I can't imagine how it felt to lose your mom. So young, but you drink the
For me, I ain't afraid to take the blame. It's a broken road, and it's too long. Deserano was a friend of mine. Too much double talk and too much time.
Welcome back. It's The Kaufman Show. I'd say baseball edition, but who's kidding who?
Expos edition.
There you go. There you go. Brief chat about R.A. Dickey because he's tearing up Major League Baseball right now. But other than that, this has been... We've continued the Expos orgy from the weekend.
Yeah. No, I mean...
I still like what Joey said to us. That killed me.
What did he say?
We can't even mention it on air, but it was brilliant. If anybody wants to know, just send me a Facebook message.
But, I got to admit, I I got into a great conversation outside, and I missed the first half of my brother's song, or I think the whole thing. And you actually texted me, like, your brother's on now, and then you said, oh, no, forget it. So I said, okay, I can continue the conversation. So I'm blaming you, Dave.
That's cool.
I was in a great conversation with Joey Elias and Terry Haig. It was one of the funniest things I've ever
called,
heard.
They called your brother up on stage prematurely.
Okay.
So he, I sent you a text right away being like, your bro's coming on, you better get back here.
Yeah.
Like you'd never seen him perform before or something.
No. No, but at this venue, I would have wanted to see it, but at least I saw the second one.
Well, that's it. You missed the Carter song.
Yeah, and I would have been all upset and blubbery, and why would I want to see that?
Well, right. Or at least made fun of me for being all upset and blubbery.
Yeah.
Huge shout out to Lisa Mackey, who was on stage and performed with Anakin Slade.
Yes.
And she was fantastic.
They harmonize great, don't they?
Yeah, they really do.
It sounded really good. It's really hard to do that live.
I know. It's like the Jimmy Riggers. Both of them, the two best harmonizers in town, Dave says and rapper. Andre and Anakin and Lisa.
Right. It says rappers can't sing. My brother can. He's got a set of pipes on him.
We know that's not true.
Yeah, well, you know, old
some,
guys
sing. Some rappers can't sing. Some rappers can't rap, frankly.
Yeah, these days, yeah, that's pretty true.
So we're going to go one more segment, I imagine. We've got some people waiting on the line, but, well, it's almost time for an update, and... I know you all need to know what's going on in the world because we've been talking about the past.
Right.
And Jimmy's not here to talk about the past.
No.
Well, actually,
Jimmy's
kind of
got
is.
A hell of a sunburn. I don't know. What were you doing?
Hi, Jimmy.
It was a bad day on Saturday. I was organizing an event for the city.
Okay.
It was outdoors, beautiful weather. I wasn't paying attention to the sun coming on. I was just working.
Dude, you look
working.
Like a reverse raccoon right
everything
now.
Worked, everything
like a bizarro raccoon.
I think he looks like a superhero.
Yeah.
12 hours in the sun. I wasn't paying attention to the sun. I wasn't paying attention to the fact that I was being red because I was working. Everything worked perfectly. I got home at around 8:30. I looked in the mirror. I was about to put water on my face.
No.
I hadn't eaten, hadn't drank anything all day. And all of a sudden, I just looked at where my sunglasses are. It was just white because, of course, the sunglasses were protecting.
It still is, buddy.
It is white. Yeah. Exactly. And everything else on my face was totally red. That's just what happens when you don't pay attention to the weather.
Ben Christensen, we spoke with him 5 minutes ago. He has chimed in on Twitter. Such a pleasure to be on the Kaufman Show with Jonah Carey and Anakin Slade and Jay tonight. Surprised we didn't have a Dave Steve reference. Now, I just got to say... Dave Steeb was a Toronto Blue Jay.
Yeah.
Now, I understand what he's saying. The last
poor man, Steve Rogers. That's what he was.
Except that Dave Steeb was in the news today.
Was
because Dave Steeb was the last pitcher to throw back-to-back one-hitters.
Ah.
So that's about the only way that Dave Steeb's going to get mentioned on this show.
Somewhere Dave Steeb's having his own little party.
Now, didn't he go twice 8 2/3 before giving up a hit?
I don't know.
Yeah, Anakin Slade is nodding in agreement. Oh,
Anakin Slade's still here?
Part of the Toronto lore. Oh, and before we go to break, I'll give you a very quick anecdote from the end of the gala on Saturday night. The Seattle Sounders soccer team were staying at the same hotel at the Sheraton. And I ride the elevator up at the end of the night, and there's a bunch of Seattle Sounders in the elevator. And at the back of the elevator is Vic Router from TSN. So I say to Vic, man, you just missed a hell of a party on the fourth floor. You should come check out the end of it. And he was like, I don't think I can come. It would make me too sad. I called the game when Vladdy hit that shot that hit the panel.
Oh.
So I said to him, I'm going to email him, and we'll have him on one day.
Great.
There you go.
That's how you get things done.
A little Joel Plaskett to go out on. Jimmy's got an update, and we'll be back. You know what that sound is, AJ?
Is it over already?
I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
Well, we didn't have much time to talk.
It just means it's the start of the last segment.
Yeah.
It means it's time to get to John in Denver.
Yeah, we got calls
coming
in.
And he just hit the 1 hour mark.
Oh,
we're
boy.
Taking calls for the next 20 minutes. 514-790-0990, 1-866-896-2546. Please like The Kaufman Show on Facebook. We have been interacting with it more and more and more. Put up a wonderful photo album, which you should add to, Jay.
I will do that tomorrow.
Great.
I will add all my photos on there, as well as my brother's file that he has.
Yeah, and he got some great ones of us as well.
Yeah.
With Anya and with Lisa in one of them. And,
yeah.
Yeah, just good stuff all around.
I looked so good.
You did.
I looked so good.
So did I.
Yeah.
The cardigan looked good. The Gullickson jersey looked real good.
Yes, it did.
I've never worn something so expensive in my life.
Yes.
By the way, I am on Twitter. You can interact with me at The Kaufman Show, K-A-U-F-M-A-N. Jay is at Jay Pub Radio. And what's the other thing? Oh, yeah. We put all these shows up on a podcast.
Yes, we do.
TheKaufmanShow.podbean.com, as well as on iTunes. Just type in The Kaufman Show. The Alice Valentine interview is up already. And the rest of the show will be up by, half an hour after this one ends. And I'll send out a little tweet and let you all know about it. In the meantime, let's go all the way to Denver, Colorado, and speak with John. Hello, John.
You know, I was debating whether to fake snore and then wake up in the middle of the call.
That would have been good.
Well, if you want me to be...
I didn't want to get hung up on.
If you want me to be nicer to you, John, that wouldn't have been a good way to...
Yeah, I do want you to be nicer.
Why? I'm nice to you.
Actually, I called in because I wanted to give a shout-out to a mentor of mine who got a big promotion today. In 2004, I was a team manager on his college basketball team my freshman year. Mike Dunlap, the new coach of the Charlotte Bobcats.
Okay, well, congratulations to Mike.
And that's...
Are you sure? I'm not sure. I'm willing to say that. I think it may be a curse.
Well, unfortunately, he's going to be working for a pretty bossy Mike, isn't he?
Yikes! Luckily, he's just as stubborn as. You know,
man, you think Andre Dawson's intimidating. Look at Michael Jordan. I can't imagine having that guy as my boss.
Yeah.
Talk about expectations through the roof.
Dunlap's a guy who won't put up with it.
Huh.
Anyways, I was giddy about an hour ago when I called in originally. At this point, my enthusiasm has waned.
Oh, well, I bet in that hour you learned more about the Expos than you ever thought you would.
As thought or cared to.
John, thank you so much for the call. Have a great night. We'll speak to you soon, buddy. John just sat on hold for an hour. Oh, we kept him on for 3 minutes. That's not bad.
That's not bad.
That's a decent ratio.
He'll
right?
never call in again, that's for sure.
I'm sure he will.
Okay.
We love John. John loves us. And I think it's great that John listens all the way.
In Denver, Colorado.
That's right. It's like Travis listening in Asheville, NSC.
Yes.
Or Asheville, North Carolina.
That's right.
We like Asheville, NSC. By the way, Asheville tourists. Single A franchise for the Colorado Rockies. Pitching coach, Joey Eishen.
There you go.
So we know where to find him for the 94 reunion. Let's go to Brian in Toronto. Man, do people in Montreal ever call this show?
No.
What's going on, Brian? How are you?
I'm doing great, right, guys. It was great meeting up with you in the entire weekend.
It was very nice meeting you as well.
Saturday all day, and you know, Sunday was just an amazing Father's Day, just reminiscing, you know, with my family in there and having Father's Day, my 86-year-old dad, showing him all the pictures and videos I downloaded, and it was unbelievable. I'm still in a high.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
I want to give you guys a little perspective, though, because, you know, I'm turning 48. I was like 17, you know, when 81 happened. And, you know, basically just I didn't even know what a girl looked like at 17. Seriously, I was into ball that much. And
you
I caught up.
Guy, man.
I caught up later in life.
Okay, good, good.
I caught up. Okay,
go.
Don't worry.
Go.
I was taken care of, but
phew.
I lived and breathed and died, and I never had the access to the players like I had this weekend. You know, I was basically sneaking in, you know, I was getting into better seats, you know, odd time here and there, but before the game going for BP, you know, going in and just when they come for the tunnel, getting the odd autograph here and there kind of thing, and maybe odd hi, you know, how you doing? But, you know, I never really had access like I did this weekend. Now, to have that, you know, it was just incredible, you know, to have these little scrums with all the players.
That was what was so impressive about this event was the access to the players and how open they were to taking pictures and signing autographs. No one was stuck up. Nobody thought they were better than anybody else. Of course, a lot of people paid a pretty penny to be there. But
do you think it's because it's a different era of ball player? Like, do you think that when they bring back the 2003 Expos that it'll be that same feeling?
I mean, let's be honest. Who else is going to know who Roland Office is? I mean, this is.
I did not know who Roland Offus was.
Right. Well, I did.
I'd heard the name, but I mean,
but I didn't know what he looked like, no. And I never saw him play. I was too young.
Right.
But, I mean, for these guys.
I can count on one hand. I remember Dawson with the Cubs and the Red Sox,
yeah.
And the Marlins, obviously.
Sure.
But Tim Raines and Bryn Smith are the only two guys that were there this weekend that I remember in Expos uniforms.
Right. Yeah.
Amazing. And then just talking to Larry Parrish, who was next to me the whole night, and I had a Topps baseball card book, all the Expo teams from 69 all the way up to, I think it went up to like 87, so it covered all of LP's career. And he spent 5 minutes flipping through that book from 73 on, looking and joking around with me with all the players he used to play with and everything. And it was just awesome having that little book, you know, that I got a dollar I paid for, you know, and it gave him such pleasure, you know, to see that. You know, that was really cool.
Makes you feel young again, eh, Brian?
It really did. Yeah, absolutely. So thanks, guys. I appreciate the memories.
Oh, it was, it was just really nice to meet you, and it was great to be there amongst so many happy fans. And
I'm in the doghouse, by the way. I just woke my wife up calling in, so
our apologies to your lovely wife. And considering what you were saying before about being into only baseball at 17, you better go back to her and be real nice.
You got it.
Brian, thanks a lot for the call. Have a good night.
All right, bye.
That was Brian Gerstein. We met him. He's been interacting with the show for a long time. Lives in Toronto.
Yeah, we got a chance to meet a lot of our listeners as well.
It was
well.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
And it was cool. And
there's nothing
people
cooler
recognizing
than,
us by our voices.
Nothing cooler than that. I've never had that happen until the Gary Carter benefit at Hurley's Irish Pub.
Yeah.
And where the chef, Andrew from Montebello, that won the contest to go see Game 4 of the Cup Finals.
Yeah.
He was like, "Oh, I recognize those voices," and that was very cool.
We have distinct voices, Mr. Kaufman.
I guess I don't know. I know you do.
Yeah, well, mine you can hear from the other end of the room. That's why they probably knew who I was right away.
You can tell when I'm excited because suddenly the voice goes like this.
Yes.
514-790-0990. We've got a few minutes left. Let's go to George in Saint Lazare. Hello, George.
Hey, how's it going, Dave and Jay?
Great. How are you, my friend?
Could be better, but hanging in there. Been a long time since I've spoken to you two.
We hope that everything is works out okay, and our thoughts and prayers are with you, George.
Thank you very much for that. All I just called in to say is it's amazing what the power of Gary Carter's spirit has done for this city as far as baseball and Expos is concerned. It was I wasn't able to attend, but I'm telling you, I was getting emails, I was getting photographs sent to me. It was an unbelievable feeling. Even though I wasn't physically part of this reunion of the 1981 team and the Expos, I felt the love. I felt the spirit of the Expos. It was amazing. I had a great experience myself also because I couldn't attend. My friend was at the gala, and he had a picture of Tim Raines, which I had given to him with Pete Rose, where he's stretching out first base. So he happened to be sitting at the table with Tim Raines, and he got him to sign it for me. And he says, "Well, can you do this for my friend? He's not being able to attend because he has family problems right now, family issues." So he said to me, he tells him, "Why don't you get your buddy on the phone and we'll cheer him up?" Now, how amazing was
that?
Wow. Oh, George.
Wow. So he called you.
And the other thing was he also when I went down to Cooperstown, I had taken a picture with Crow on the bus, and he got that signed for me, and Crow signed it to my homie George. All the very best, Warren Cromartie Expos, fantastic.
Take a minute, George, because we're running out of time. But take a minute and tell us about that phone call and how did it make you feel?
Well, to be honest with you, you know what, it was a great feeling because you know what, here you see these ball players and you hear about. You know, a lot of the negative stories, right? You hear about Tim Raines, that he was on coke and so forth and so on. And when the ball was being hit to left field, he couldn't see the ball at times because he was influenced under that narcotic, right? But he's changed his life around. And you know what? It's not that person that you really imagine him to be. I don't know if you can feel that in my voice right now.
You sound very emotional tonight.
Yeah, he takes out, you know what? He actually took the time. What did he owe me? He didn't owe me anything, right? He doesn't even know who I am. But you know what? He understood the circumstance. He says, you know what? Call your buddy on the phone. Let's cheer him up. And that means a lot to me.
George, that's a wonderful story, man. That's really, really, really cool.
That's what Tim Raines was like the entire time. He was so interactive with the people. He was giving hugs. He was joking around, always in a good mood, never refused an autograph, never just looking at people straight in the eye, like human beings, yeah. You know? There are some other guys who are jaded, and they won't even look at you, you know? They'll sign the thing, and then they'll throw it away, and then go on to other things. This guy would take the time, and he got the most autograph seekers out of anybody.
Raines over Dawson.
Yeah, I would really? Say so at one point. People just wanted to be near him and just talk to him because they can see what kind of vibe was coming out of this guy. It was amazing.
Yeah, look at the photos on my Facebook page, on the Kaufman Show Facebook page, and you can see Dawson and Raines teasing each other. Just they literally all turned into 20-year-old kids.
Yeah.
And it was a pleasure to see it. And something that Anakin had mentioned, actually, I think he wrote it on his Facebook page, that he was talking with Stan Bonson, and he said that Stan said to him that he played a long time for the White Sox, and they've never done anything like that. They've never had a reunion where they brought old teams back, and how special that was and what a testament it was to the city of Montreal. Now, maybe it's because the Cubs are more ingrained and maybe they do it with the Cubbies.
Well, the White Sox are a legendary team.
No joke, man. Yeah. Shoeless Joe. Yeah, sure. You know, I mean, and all the way through. And not to mention the fact that they're the team that has won a World Series in the city of Chicago in the last 100 years.
Right.
Montreal came off very well this weekend. I thought our city looked really good. From the crap the week before with the Grand Prix.
Right.
You know what? It was just nice. There was nothing. And it's funny. There were a few people that sent me emails saying, are the protests going to affect the Montreal Baseball Project reunion weekend?
No, we'll just get Ellis Valentine out there. He'll take care of those cats in 2 seconds.
The answer was no. And I knew that beforehand. There was, I don't see what the goal would have been to obstruct an event like this.
No.
And it was just so nice to have a breather from anything political. I barely looked at the news this weekend. I was in full-on Expos mode. And then Sunday morning, I went off to Vermont. And this is something that we'll talk about more in depth next week. But you guys all know Dan Gradinsky. He's the Kaufman Show legal analyst from the firm of Borden, Ladner, Gervais. Dan is also an exceptional athlete, and I will go out on a limb and say that he is a better athlete than any athlete that we interview. And if you guys want to know why, go check out a website called youmaydie.com.
Jeez.
Yeah, this is the death race in Pittsfield, Vermont. Yeah. It's been on Nightline. It's been in the New York Times. And Dan last year, and we had him on air earlier this year to talk about it, he competed in the death race. They don't tell you what you're going to be doing. They don't tell you how long it's going to last. All they tell you is it's like going into hell. And when I saw Dan on Sunday afternoon, he was in his 48th hour of racing. It had started Friday afternoon. It was Sunday afternoon. He was in hour number 48 of racing. When I saw him, he was making his way up a mountain, about a 4-hour hike normally. Even longer when you have your 70-pound rucksack on you. And even longer when you have to carry a bag of concrete along with it. Jay, these guys were ex-military, Navy SEALs, like the toughest of the tough. And I'm flying by them down the trails. Me, who's tired just thinking about this. But I'm telling you, these guys must have done 200-plus miles before it was all over. And it started with about 300 contestants, and I'm not sure how many it was at the end, but at 10 o'clock last night when I left the town of Pittsfield, Vermont, there were still 70 people in it. And it ended at 6 o'clock in the morning in the 61 hours. Can you imagine staying awake for 61 hours, hiking, running, swimming in the middle of the night?
I've stayed awake for 61 hours before, but it had nothing to do with a death
nothing
race.
Nothing at all. No, no. Although I bet you some people kind of thought that you were headed that way.
Yeah. Imaydie.com.
So check out youmaydie.com because next week we're going to bring Dan in studio and talk about this and give it the credit that it's due. It's not a pro sport, but wow, does it make pro athletes look like amateurs. I've never seen the human spirit pushed as far. It's brain too. It's not just body. You have to be able to tell yourself that you can do this no matter how hard it is, no matter how long it takes. And it was a very different feeling from everything that I'd seen all weekend with the expos. But to go from one to the other was...
I'm surprised you even had the energy, because I know
I did not sleep all weekend. And today I could not. I barely.
Because I worked every night too.
Yeah.
I did the golf tournament, then I worked, then I did the gala. I helped my brother.
Well, you worked
the
night before
the
golf tournament as well.
That's right.
No, it was a crazy week, and I wish it wasn't over.
I wouldn't trade it for anything. No. I'd do that again. I would do it next week. The 94 expos, or the 96 or 97 expos, or the 2003 expos.
Jay, we want them all, and we want them. I want to feel that feeling again. And it was wonderful to feel that feeling again. I am so proud of my city. And so proud of all of you Expos fans that showed up this weekend and made it special. When I got to Dorval and saw a lineup of 300 people at 8:30 in the morning, it didn't matter that I was on 2 hours sleep anymore. I was ready to go. 500 people that I counted at one point that afternoon in Dorval.
Oh, the final attendance.
Oh, I'm telling you what I saw with
just
my
you.
Eyes. In that line, I counted 500 people.
Imagine.
And 499 Expos caps, one Nationals cap, Jay.
Yeah.
It's always got to be one idiot. I want to thank in-studio guests Anakin Slade and Jonah Carey. What an honor to have both of them with us tonight. And I especially want to thank Ellis Valentine. If you haven't heard it, if you missed it, check it out. TheKaufmanShow.podbean.com. Our thanks to Ben Christensen, as always. The most passionate baseball fan I know. John Kakalakis, as always, kicking ass in the editing room. Taking names. We love that guy. Jimmy G, thank you, sir. And remember the immortal words of Baz Luhrmann. Always wear sunscreen. Jay, thanks, brother.
Thank you, brother. I had a great time this weekend.
Me too, man.
Glad you were there.
Ah, it was wonderful. And now the song that we have stolen is our own. This is Joel Plaskett, Love This Town.
In the early days, then you Davy and me faced out in our suit, some French restaurant. I saw Riviere de Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show, where the Expos fire still burns bright. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman, and we'll see you next week.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?